there, it's a studio complex, a studio house, a mm-hmm. real cool, very professional studio. And there I have my own studio room with all cool equipment and stuff. And there I produced Kissing Dynamite as well. Yeah.
In terms of the rhythm, in fact, from the beginning of the band, you're kind of keeping the pace of releasing a new record each 2 years. Is that the natural rhythm for the band?
I don't know. It came naturally to release an album each 2 years. Honestly, we never think about, okay, it's 2016, the next has to be 2018. We don't know. Of course, people like it to look at our discography and see, okay, each 2 years like a perfect clock. But you never know when you have a songwriter crisis or something like that. Then maybe 5 years passed until you release new material. And we don't stress ourselves by that. Like, we really do an album if we are really inspired by something. And we don't have the pressure from the record label to, well, in 2 months we want to have the master. We say, no, you won't get it if we're not finished. And now our record deal is over with this album and we sign to something new.
So you renew with AFM or you switch to another label?
If I would tell you, I would have to kill you.
All right. We'll see in the future what happens.
Yeah. No.
So okay. So right now, as we speak, Generation Goodbye is the end of your contract with AFM. So that was what happened.
That's
next. We'll see.
Yeah, that's true, because the options are over then, and we will. No, honestly, I can tell you, we don't know yet if we stick to AFM once more or if we find another record company.
You see what the proposition we'll have and you...
Yeah, totally. But there is one sure thing that we keep going and I think we will get proposals.
Yeah, I'm sure for that. But in terms of rhythm, are you able to write during tours or you have to be back from all this crazy time, be back home, rest, and then mm-hmm. be able to be creative?
Well, rest is something rare that really gets lost, I think, with a lot of people. And everybody should have a rest sometimes. Well, that wasn't your question, sorry. But the writing process, most of the times it happens really in the studio that I'm sitting there all day long and playing the piano for myself. And
so you're composing more on piano than guitars?
Yeah, I do.
Oh.
And I'll tell you later. But I really play myself into some kind of, I wouldn't say trance, because it doesn't have to do something with a spiritual thing, or I don't do drugs to compose. I just play along and forget the time, mm-hmm. let's say like this. And suddenly, if I have a good melody, I stick to it and evolve it and do progress on it. But, and that's what I wanted to say a few seconds ago about, I'm telling you later, is now. Later is now.
All right.
There are very different ways of writing songs, not just in general, but also for us guys, because what we also do is, at the very beginning, I always tell the whole band, every five guys, please give me a list of your slogans. Like, really think about cool titles, cool slogans, a little poem, mm-hmm. so to speak. And then we add everything to a huge list mm-hmm. to look at for everybody, and then I go through it and I think, okay, that's cool, and I don't give a shit whose it was. It's more like what catches you at all mm-hmm. of a sudden. And She Came, She Saw was something like that. Mm-hmm. I read She Came, She Saw, She Conquered Us All, and it was directly the river. She came, she saw, she conquered us all.
Okay.
So, and you have a good start by that. But, okay, another different songwriting receipt for us is, of course, a riff, like somebody to a It can be anything, really, and it can be everywhere. This is the point.
You get plenty of songs, ideas, and riffs in your mobile.
I do.
All right.
You have to check my memo. It's like a very huge list.
So save everything on the cloud, because there's so many artists who, by losing your phone, you're losing.
Look at that. This is all songwriting.
All right.
List doesn't.
Okay.
Doesn't really end. No, I never save something on the cloud, because I have a little paranoia about people stealing my shit.
Okay. If we come back to the Megalomania period, if you take the whole period from writing, recording, the tour, so this whole chapter for the band, is there one souvenir or one peak that for you would synthesize this whole period? One event?
The Megalomania period?
Yeah. Something that
to summarize the Megalomania period, I would say we did everything right. Even though we had more synthetic sounds on Megalomania than now, because I think it's a very necessary thing to somehow go a little bit more to the right or to the left to find the perfect balance, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And Megalomania absolutely was a success for us. I mean, we had the biggest chart entries, although we don't give much attention to this. But what we give attention to is the touring. And we really did our very first, very good headlining tour throughout Europe. And in Germany, in particular, we really sold out venues which were five times big than the last ones on Money, Sex and Power. And so I think we did it right. And I think that Generation Goodbye is a logical, development. Yeah.
So you're expecting to even pack bigger venues?
I don't know. You know,
there's really a lot of tour schedule, which is already.
Yeah, but we didn't book bigger venues. Actually, we booked the same venues. If you take Stuttgart or Munich, and we were very very likely we will sell them out this time also.
Mm-hmm.
And in some other cities that we really played some small clubs there, we booked some bigger venues, but. You know, it's not about getting Megalomania and think I am God and I can do whatever I want. We're not stupid, and we know that we really take our steps, but not too big steps, because we don't want to fall down.
Okay. You mentioned the fact that the album is a little bit topic in terms of this, how the current young generation is using some new tools such as smartphones and everything.
Yeah.
What strikes me is that you're in your 20s, so you're part of this generation, and you should be, you know, you should dive yourself in the fact that I'm using a smartphone.
Have one.
Yeah. You're taking picture of everything. You're tweeting. I'm a bit surprised by the, you know, we could expect that kind of statement saying, okay. Try to think a little by using this new technology and to try live your life and don't live your life through a mobile. For someone who would be, you know, 40s or 50s guy.
But that would be so uncool, because it's always like the adults say, I shouldn't do this because I'm younger. I mean, and if as an artist, I can tell you that it's always been like this scenario that you write what's on your mind. And on my mind is, and on Annie's mind as well, is since a long time, we think, you go through the streets, a very a concrete example, you go through the streets, you see people sitting at a table, at the same table, like three or five guys and girls, and they don't talk to each other. Everybody's staring at their smartphones and eating whilst. Why? I mean, just live the moment, enjoy the moment, enjoy that you were there with friends, not strangers, and talk to each other. A smartphone is a good thing. I do have one as well. I use Facebook as well, because it you can spread news very fast and you can reach a lot of people. But what I don't do is share hatred. I don't share stupid lies that I don't reflect if it's true or not. And I will not post if something falls down, you know what I mean, some things that are really not necessary, not important.
Yeah.
And I think this is a disease, actually, that's on people's mind. And this is my thinking since a very long time with this social media insanity. And my advice, and Generation Goodbye gives this advice as well, is use it. Keep going. It's all good. I'm not a nostalgic, stupid idiot that tells people this is all bad and the devil lives in it. My advice is just be conscious what you do.
Okay.
For example, the girls. Don't post pics of yourself when you are half naked. I mean, you don't necessarily have to see tits or something. It can be harmless, actually, but it can be misused in the internet. The next day you land on any porn site or whatever, in a collage, you know?
Okay.
And this is just one example. There are so many. But also the internet is something very useful, of course. I mean, just be conscious, be reflected.
For example, do you notice that maybe that's something I've noticed. I don't know if you on your side it was the same case. That people are now less and less, you know, ready to make you sign CDs, for example, and prefer to take selfies, where you have a picture more than your signature for your autograph.
I can understand that.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you why, because I never paid attention to a signature.
Okay.
For me personally, I can understand that people like signatures.
I'm old school like that.
Yeah. That's everybody's taste. For me personally, I was always thinking, why do they want to have this? I mean, I give it to them, but it's just anybody could have done this. But on a picture, and it doesn't matter if it's a selfie or somebody else took the picture, that's really the same for me. On a selfie, you really have the memory captured with your favorite artist, with your favorite football player, with your mom, with your dad, and you can really print it and hang it in your flat and your house. Well, you can also hang the signed CD in your house, but I think this is just a matter of taste.
And if you had the opportunity to make a selfie with anyone, who would it be?
If I could
imagine someone famous or not, I don't know, but
I think the last selfie I did was with Mark Tonillo from Accept.
Singer. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but not because I think, oh, Mark Tonillo, but because of we know each other since 2 years and really met at any festival we played. Every festival we played, Accept was also playing, and we were always seeing us, hey, but we never really got together because of stressy schedules and stuff. So we took our time and made a photo together. And for the future, well, of course, I do have my heroes as well. I mean, Steven Tyler is a big person that I admire. I would do a selfie with him. And I think he's a cool guy. I would think that he would want it as well.
Okay, I hope so. So you choose the album for the first single Hashtag Your Life.
Yeah.
Why? I'm a bit surprised. I think after that question of taste, I suppose. But I think Generation Goodbye is for the first. The number one track is even better.
Yeah. Okay.
So
this is gonna be a single as well.
Okay.
In a few days, but.
Is that your decision or the label decision?
It was
a
common decision, yeah, because Hashtag Your Life is very problematic. It makes the message clear within seconds. And this message is important for us. That's why we really want people to reach with it. And Hashtag Your Life really was kind of a bomb. Exploding because everyone was talking about it in the rock scene suddenly. Well, yeah, a matter of taste. Some say this chorus is as catchy as hell, I can't get it out of my head 2 days. Some others don't like the hash, whatever. I think it was good decision for the start because, yeah, as I told you, it was... What I liked about it, the feedback was, I love the idea behind the song. And what I really think is cool because if the idea, the inner core of something is on people's mind, this is actually what you want as an artist. Sure. Not just the package surrounding it, but the inner core is visible and touches people. So that was cool, yeah.
And in general, that's also maybe a mystery of for me, for the music business, how do you decide the tracklist order? Why is Generation Goodbye the first, and then the second song is Hashtag, and then the third? I know there must be a balance between fast songs and slow songs, but except that, why this one is the first, one is this one the eighth, and this one is the fifth?
I decided it, and I sent it over to the band, and nobody would say, now this may be on this position. Everybody was suddenly like, okay, perfect.
Yeah, so what's the element of choice for you?
Okay.
Why this song is number this
one?
Yeah.
Okay, we can do this. Utopia, for example, our longest track that we've ever done, the most epic track, mm-hmm. with an ending that really you can feel the peace coming, and something that really has an end. You know, mm-hmm. it was clear to put this at the end of the track list. For us, it was clear also to put the title track at number one, so you have the frame.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And now you just have to think of a good order inside of this frame. And of course, it has to do something with up-tempo, mid-tempo, slow ballads, mid-tempo, up-tempo, that you have a dynamic curve. But it also has something to do with how the story gets told, mm-hmm. you know. For example, Flying Colors, you can't put a song like Flying Colors on in the very beginning of an album because it has to deal somehow with the end. It has to deal, if we are going down, we go with Flying Colors. Everybody will see us. Everybody will see us a very last time. So that's why this track is on position 8 or 9, I think, 8. And you could find an explanation for anything. The duet, for example, Masterpiece, is really something that I wouldn't want at the end, because I, but also not at the beginning, because I thought a duet in the very beginning is maybe strange. For the end, it's no appreciation for mm-hmm. the other artist, you know. So we put this right in the middle, or almost in the middle.
But do you think that, for example, imagine a great album, I don't know, Master of Puppets from Metallica. Don't you think that? Do you think that the album could be less great if the track order would have been different?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So it's a key element from to bring the music or the album to a new level?
Totally, totally. Because when I made the track list, I didn't already have the track list on my smartphone. And in my car, I always plug my smartphone into the aux channel. Mm-hmm. Because it's my CD thing is broken. Well, and I didn't have the track list on my smartphone already and started it. And some songs were switched right the opposite, yeah. And for some reason, one song wouldn't catch me as much as with a real track list.
It's not the same magic anymore.
Yeah, and I can't tell you why. I just can tell you that it is the fact.
Yeah.
So but you're right, it really has to deal with another creative decision, a small creative decision mm-hmm. compared to writing songs, but it is a creative decision and it makes sense totally.
All right. How did you work with the cover picture artist, especially there? You had this little game, you're saying you want to give the opportunity to the fans that their hashtag could be on the smartphone, you see the screen of the smartphone. So I suppose this game is over, you know who will be the hashtag, right?
Yeah, because our record label fucked it up.
Ah, so in fact there's no one...
Actually, what we would want that nobody knows until release.
So the first day in the store you have and you see this hashtag, whatever.
But our record label made a mistake in a hurry and would send the photos of the box, you know, the unboxing, to the stores, and they would.
So on a commercial, you could see who was the one, right? Yeah.
If you looked at it closely, but everyone did already, so this is kind of over. But I think the idea is cool still, because we are really known as a fan close band. You know, we do have a close relationship with the fans. Means that we go down every time after the show to the fans to make pictures and sign autographs. Means that we already do some games with them so they can win something. And that means that we always try to have new ideas to involve the fans somehow in the process, and also in the process of the making. Because I think, you know, we are music fans ourselves. And I just think as a fan, if Iron Maiden lets me look inside of their studio, how it's going on, or even better, very actual thing, to let me look inside of At Force One, that's something you appreciate as a fan, and that makes me feel closer to the band. And yeah, that's why we had this decision, and that was also cool, a cool thing to spread the word for the cover as well. And by the way, do you know that a French guy did the cover?
Nope.
It's Stan, I forgot his second name. But you
Stan?
Stan is his pre-name. You can look
S-T-E-N?
S-T-A-N.
A-N, alright.
Stan.
Stan, right.
Yeah, Decker, I think.
Stan W. Dot Decker.
He's
working for lots of AFM recording artists.
Yeah.
More in the sci-fi or Eric fantasy universe. Okay, it's Stan Decker, right.
Yeah, and to talk about the cover real quick, that was also our idea, by the way. We really did everything on our own this time, and to have, well, we thought, what's the symbol of our generation? And it must be the smartphone. Mm. There's no stronger symbol available. And to have the smartphone on the cover, which is broken but still lights up with 114 unread messages, 77 missed calls, means the hurriness, the busyness of our generation. I can never look back. What's going on here? I missed something there. I missed something there. I can't do everything on at the same time. The sickness, you know. And this small pub or diner or whatever it is in the background symbolizes that it's. And you can see the dawn breaking, or is it the dawn or the dusk? I don't know the English word for. Well, it gets morning again.
Yeah, yes, yes.
So the party is over. You leave something. And you didn't just leave, you left your smartphone behind. You left your hurriedness behind.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. I would like to finish our interview with a short few questions. So just two, three questions.
Yeah.
Your least favorite song from Kiss and Dynamite?
My favorite?
No, the least favorite. The one you don't like anymore, if I don't like you.
The least?
Yeah, the least favorite. Is there one song that...
I Hate Hip-Hop. One of the very, very first songs that we wrote, because I don't think musically it's a good song, but I think the message is not even funny anymore, because I think it's just intolerant.
Okay.
You know, every genre has a good... has good material, even hip-hop. And I changed I think we changed our mind on this, and me, of course, as well. I wouldn't say I hate hip-hop, because hip-hop somehow also influenced a lot of genres that would develop after it. So if there wouldn't be a hip-hop, there wouldn't be some other genres as well. And I think it's like... hatred is bullshit. It's the same with human beings, no matter if black or white, no matter if Jew or Muslim. We are actually all the same, and we shouldn't hate each other.
All right. The song you would have loved to compose. The song, you know, in
Bohemian Rhapsody.
All right. And the last one, was there an event or... a song or something that kind of spark the light for you to become want to become a guitar player and an artist?
didn't understand that question.
Were there in your childhood or teenagehood an event or a video clip or a song that make you want to become an artist, to become a guitar player?
My very first AC/DC concert, I was there with my dad and my brother, and I was 7 or 8 years old, and we had this we had white polo shirts on, and we looked totally different than all the rest of the audiences, of course, and that was just awesome. And I stared at these huge cannons to blow up, and the huge sound they made. And I, on the way out of the hall, we left a bit earlier because of, you know, a lot of people going through small halls is not so good for a 7-year-old child. But on the way out of the hall, there were drunk people lying in the corner somewhere, and I asked my dad, "What's wrong with them? What's wrong with them?" Because I wouldn't understand drunk people. And he made a joke and said he was shot by the cannons. And this is what sticks to my mind still. And yeah, that made me feel I want to do this.
Okay, so AC/DC is the beginning of everything.
And probably also the end. We will see.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.